marched into the offices and said I was a naval worker, at least an admiralty worker, this was an admiralty yard, could they give me a job? And they said, oh yes. So I had to go and see the doctor. He had a big clinic there, but everybody had to pass the doctor for them into the yard, men and... Well, there was no women in the shipyard. In the 1418 war, you had women in the engineering, and they came back again in the next war to do engineering, but no women had ever worked actually in the shipyard side. So I went up, saw the doctor, who was a Scotsman, and he said, what were you doing? I said, well, I was being trained for inspection work in Admiralty. I said, I think they knew there was a war coming on and we were well trained before. He said, you know, there's a job going in the shipyard. They're looking for someone with experience. I said, I've never worked in a shipyard. He says, no, but you know what shipyards are? I says, oh yeah, I'm Clyde born and bred. I know all about shipyards. So he said, I'll send you to the shipyard manager. And I went and saw him, and he offered me the job to start all the women in the shipyard. But first of all, I had to go through a sort of rigorous test. What's the difference between a shipyard welder and a caulker and a plumber? But I knew them all. You live in Clydebank. His daddy's a caulker, her daddy's a welder, you know, and sheet iron workers. But the biggest job was the women in Barrow, they had no industries there. In Clydebank, we had Singers and all the different little factories. You went to Glasgow to work. But in Barrow, which was in a peninsula, when the girls left school, if they had qualifications, they went nursing or into the offices in Barrow, into the yard. But majority of them maybe went into domestic service. They waited till they were old enough, and the first thing they did, they got married. And I never saw so many young brides. But however, I was told this is going to be a difficult job because the women are not used to industry here. But you know, they were really marvellous. And I think what made them good was the men looked after them because they were wives of somebody they knew or something like that. But they had to work. And when they came into, I was given this office with a big knee-hole desk. I felt really pompous sitting behind it. And I'd get a dozen girls at a time every morning. I think I started about 2,000 altogether. And the first lot that came in taught me a lesson. I started to explain that I would pick them out, those I thought would be ideal for the joiner's shop. Well, I mean, you look at girls and yourself, she looks too frail, she would never be able to carry a sheet iron sheet with the men. I'll stick her in the joiner's shop, or else I'll get her a job in the foreman's office or something like that. And I started this spiel, you know, told them all, and I said, you'll get boiler suits, which you'll have to pay for, of course, but you don't have to pay for them right away. You get them taken off your wages, and your wages will be such and such. Gave them all the speed. Anyway, when I'd finished, I looked at them all, and I thought there was enough of vacant looking some of their faces. And I said, do you understand what I'm saying to you? And this one said, "Ee, no love." But it was lovely. So I had to adopt more of an English accent. It was so funny, you know. I never forgot it. I thought that's lesson number one. You're no longer Scotch. And, but.
So what kind of jobs were the ladies actually doing?
Well, they were mostly labouring with the sheet iron workers. There was caulkers, that was packing, caulking in between the ships. And plumbing, labor, plumbers, labourers. Then they made great welders because they had a better touch than the men. You know, what you call just touch welding. And they really made good welders. And then in the joiner's shop, that was about the best job. You're in a nice warm place and the smell of the wood, it was lovely. And they were doing aircraft parts or something at that time. And actually, the bomb, you've heard of the bomb that rolled and the dam bomb. Well, I really think that's where it was made, but we didn't know what they were making. No one knew what they were making. And then there were also so many girls were doing work that was related to the ships. And most of the girls were working on the ships. And I had two assistants help me. Both nurses, but one couldn't stand the pace. She had to leave. But the other one and I just carried on. Agnes was a sister in a hospital, and she gave it up to come into the yard with me, and we got on like a house and fire. We're the greatest of friends, and every day we had to go on every ship that was being built. And it wasn't a yard where everything was in one place. There was Barrow, and then there was Barrow Island, and the ships were round here. And then they sailed right round to get fitted out here, you see, so that you were on the go all the time. I think I must have walked miles and miles every day. Maybe that's why I'm healthy. And I can't think. Every day we had to go on the ship. But the men were really good with the girls. You know, they weren't soft with them. They had to work, but they were good with them. They looked after them, saw that there was no hanky-panky or nonsense or anything like that. The only time we had any worry was we were told that there was one girl who was pregnant on a ship, and I said to Agnes, we'll have to get her off there. And she said, I'll go and see her. She says, I'm not coming off this ship. She says, you can't make me. This is my job, and I love this job, and I'm staying. So I just came back with this tale, and I started looking up all the do's and don'ts, and there was nothing to say from government or anywhere that you could sack a woman for this, or you could employ them for, you know, different things. But there was nothing to say about women having babies, except that it was advisable to let them go at a certain time. But this one, they didn't say that they could refuse to go, or that you could make them go. Anyway, it went on and on. We were sweating every time we went to the ship. I said, she's going to have that baby on that ship. I said, it's your job, you're the nurse. Anyway, we got her off just about the last week. Her husband was in the forces, and I think the girl needed all the money she could get because she was in digs. But that was the only incident that we had as far as was concerned. But I'll tell you a laugh. I used to go up on this ship every day, and as I was going up the gangway, I used to hear this young boy shouting, "Watch it, lassies, here's Haggis coming." And at first it didn't dawn, and then I thought, "Oh, Haggis, that's me." And could I kept watching, but no. And one day as I was going up, he must have been a bit slow in seeing me, and I happened to see this other lad go up and nudge him, and then he turned round, you see, and I thought, that's him. His pal's given him the look. If he speaks, I know it's him. And he quickly turned away and shouted down the ship, "Hey lassies, here's Haggis." And it was only fun, but at the same time, it wasn't very nice in a way for me. And I walked up to him and I said, "Have you ever been to Scotland?" He said, "No." I I said, well, I'm going to tell you something. You go after the war and get your education, because there's no such a thing as a woman or a female haggis. I said, the male is a haggis and the female's a hag eye. And I'm a hag eye. Well, there was an old man round about, they were in fits laughing at this, and one, I always remember this one, looked and he says, the silly booger, I knew she would catch him. But I never made anything of it. I said, it's got to stop now. And every time he passed me in the shipyard, he'd go, and then one day he said, thanks for not reporting me to the foreman. I said, you're a bit late. I said, I could have had you out the gate months ago. But he was really a nice lad, you know, but you got all those wee incidents. And then I was also put onto the Court of Referees. I don't know if you've heard of the Court of Referees, where people go to fight their cases. Maybe a woman's got called up and she can't go because she's got too big a family or something like that, but we've got to judge whether she can give so many hours, you know, in the work in a week, you know, that sort of thing. The Court of Referees, there was two things I was in, Court of Referees and something else anyway. But the chairman of that crowd was a colonel, a retired colonel. You had all these people in all these jobs, you know, retired people come out and did these jobs. And then I represented the firm, which was quite a big responsibility, but I loved it, you know. I was up to there's always something going on. But I was awful glad when the war was over, because we worked 3 nights till 7:30. That was from 7:30 in the morning till 7:30 at night, 3 nights a week. Every Sunday and every second Saturday all day. So it was long hours. But you just did it. Unfortunately, Barrow was blitzed, but not badly. Nothing like the Clyde side. I mean, I landed in Barrow with just the clothes I stood up in. The whole family did. Because we had gone up, my mother wouldn't move till we had been up to the town hall. And by the time the family all got together, it was late on, and they couldn't give us a thing, and my mother wasn't going to have us all separated. So my husband said, he phoned down, and his parents said, come down there, come down to Barrow. So we all landed down in Barrow. They handed us a chitty to get on the train. We paid our fare. Anyway, they were so glad to get rid of us, I think, because they were having a terrible job finding places for people, and this was a family of six. So, but my father started work right away, so did my brother, and my sister, she had worked in the office in somewhere in Glasgow, I forget. And we were all sort of on war work before we arrived there, so it was no difficulty to get a job. We all started work the following week. My mother took over a furnished house, and were there for months, and then they sent for my father and my brother to go back home. So we thought, oh, this is great, we're going home too, you know. But my sister and I were told, no way. We weren't allowed. I mean, you couldn't argue with them. So I think my sister did get away. She sat some exam and went into the Home Office in London, but it was very difficult. If they said, you know, we need you here, you were stuck there. So I was stuck, but I loved Barrow. I lived there for about 10 years. When the war was over, they said to me, would you like to carry on in the personnel department? And I said, no. I thought, I'm getting on, I'm getting for 30 or some two or something like that by that time. I thought, if I'm going to have any family, I want it now, not when I'm older. I waited 4 years, I could have been working that 4 years. But however, I really loved it. I thought Barrow, the people were good. They were very, very good to us. circumstances up here. My father was became sort of invalided with his chest, so my husband and I had to come back to look after them. Not sorry, but I still love Barrow. I made a lot of friends down there, and there's only two of us left now. She's 92 now. The rest have all gone.
You still got your sister?
She's out in Australia. She married in Australia when she was working in the Home Office. She met this Australian, married him. She's 89. My youngest brother's 85 there last week. My sister's 89. My brother, who lives in the Faithley, is 92 in April. And I'm 94 come November. So the four of us are all still going strong. So there must be something good about Clydeside. I was born in Agamemnon Place, above the Park Bar. That's why I drink.
Down there. The Park Bar.
I don't think the Park Bar was there at that time. I don't know. They tell me it wasn't, but I've no idea. But I just, you know, these houses just above the Park Bar. My mother said she had a lovely... My mother owned a wee vegetable, fruit and flower shop just right opposite Agamemnon Place for years, and then she gave it up when my dad went to Canada. We were all supposed to go there, but he didn't like it when he came back, so...
That happened a lot of families, my grandmother's side went to America and Canada.
But I lived in Partick. Oh, the 4 years he was in Canada, I lived in Partick. I was at Thornwood School and then passed Macaulay into Highland. It was a Highland High School in those days. And when he came home, we all came back here. Except me. I stayed with my grandmother because I was reckoned that she needed somebody. And,
just like me.
My schooling was at a critical point, so no, that did any good. So that's my story of shipyard life. So you see, I owe something to the Clydeside.
Yeah.
Although I never worked in a yard here, I knew all about yards. My dad was an engineer in this. All my friends, their dads were something in shipyards. You know, we knew what they were doing.
Had Scotland changed much when you came back?
No, it was still, well, it was all blitzed when I came back.
Very bad.
It was a mess, you know. I lived in Old Mount Row, and our house got a whole stick of bombs right through, like incendiaries. And it just went whoosh. So, all my wedding presents went up and smoke.
I wasn't here
like that
night.
The whole family just had the clothes.
They were dropping the bombs.
Were you both here during the blitz?
Yes. I wasn't here while I was
in. I must come and listen to it.
I lived up the hill, you know, during the blitz.
I want to listen to both your stories.
Well, I don't think I've much to tell.
If
I start, I've gone all day. So
well, I love to hear people's
interest.
Even if you've been in jail.
Oh, no, that's one thing. I have not been in jail.
What an experience.
Well, I was born in Clydeside in 1922. And we moved up to, I don't know what, you wouldn't know the hill then.
Probably not.
You're all here. But I moved up to Radnor Park. You know what Radnor Park is now? And believe it or not, I'm only about 100 yards from where I was really brought up, where I live now. But it's a different climate. A different climate. Actually, it wasn't really see a lovely town or anything. But there were a lot of work in it. And I always worked as singers. I mean, I started as a message girl, and I just carried on, and we had to do a lot of war work. I never knew what I was doing. I never knew what the paps were for.
Did you never ask?
They couldn't tell me anyway. It was a small part that you had to keep getting the right size. But that's all I knew about it, believe me. But I don't know what else I could tell you. Anything, can you think of anything else?
Tell me about your childhood. What was that like?
My childhood? Oh, well, I was certainly brought up in Claybank. And I went to the school nearest us, which was Bacquorn. It went with it, I suppose. And then we went to high school. But you played a lot. I tell you one thing, children played outside. Yes, they played outside.
Oh, we were so happy.
There were not a thing you ever thought of sitting in the house when there were games outside. And your games took you from, you could play Peaver for quite a while. Peaver, you know, kicking the... Well, you see, you've never had that yet. This was a game yet. It was like hopscotch. It was like hopscotch. But if you were kind of well off, you got a lovely piece of stuff to play with, a lovely bit of stone. But otherwise, you'd have a nice sponge.
You came home from school at 15 and 16 and changed your clothes and went out to play. And I mean play.
Uh-huh.
And it was all Peaver,
you played with balls. I mean, you had certain seasons for doing all these things. And I never knew who started it. Just one person.
There was a season for everything.
Yes.
Remember the tops and your whip?
Oh, that was a wonderful
thing. That was a season.
Yes. You always kind of painted the tops, you know, you were cranes. But what I was going to tell you about it was a nice childhood.
I think we had an awful heart. We were poor.
There was a lot of poverty. Yeah. A lot of poverty in the late 20s, 1920s and the 30s. But I don't know. I think people were happier. But you see, the children, everyone played outside. Nobody sat in the house. You wouldn't have dreamt of sitting in a house.
You were allowed to sit in, weren't you, when you came home from school? Get out and get the fresh air.
Oh.
Even in the winter time.
Winter time? Oh, you never stayed
in
the winter.
You know these £2 tins of pears and peaches? If you were lucky enough, your mother bought one for Sunday tea or something like that. You used to put a rope through them and stand on them and walk. Do you remember that? Do you remember them?
Still.
Put your foot on top of it and you used to walk with a two.
Mind you had the stilts too.
And
you had stilts. I mean, you don't know a lot of things when you think, but
we're never still.
No.
Society's changed. Why do you think children are indoors more often now?
Hmm.
Why do you think society's changed? Why do you think children are inside more often? Do you think it's sort of, they've got more things to play with?
Yeah. Well, just now they reckon that children are suffering vitamin D, lack of vitamin D, and that's the daylight. They're not going out, they're coming home in front of the computers instead of going out and getting the sun. Sun.
They're using school nowadays, they've got to do so much of it. They do a lot of their homework on their computers now.
Oh, yes. They play too many games on them.
Two on a Sunday. You went to church first. You always had to go to church on a Sunday, so you to do that. And then you go down to the public park. And you'd have a little fair. You didn't play so much on a Sunday. You weren't allowed to play. You went to do that.
We had an awful lot going for us. Do you remember the Kinderspiel?
Oh yes, well lots of things.
That was at like a small opera, light opera really in a way. The Island of Balkis, that was one that we did. And Princess Chrysanthemum. And they put on these shows and it was all children.
maybe different churches or something like that. They used to put on. Everybody used to go to these shows, and they were wonderful, and it was good for the kids.
I think they're still doing that, because my grandson is doing Romeo and Juliet in the high school.
Are they?
Uh-huh.
Oh, but that's Shakespeare.
Yeah, Shakespeare. But they do other shows as well in the school. I think they're still at that.
No, this was singing, you know. This was a singing thing. Because there was one song nearly drove my mother up the wall. And we all used to walk around, and it was the princess was dying, this Japanese princess, you know. And it was sad and weary, and we were all, well, yeah, she's gone, the door, she got out.
Looking back, there were good days.
And picnics.
You had bad days, but you don't remember.
No.
You don't remember.
My mother and father used to take us on a Sunday during the holidays over the Faithley, before the Faithley was built, of course. And we called them the wee hills, over there to the Drummond and right away to the Wangie for a picnic. We were a great picnic over those days.
Mind you, went over the moors. Everyone went over the moors at Easter time.
You know, well, I lived in the Western Highlands during the war. I didn't know there was a war on.
And you know, another thing that I was... I'm rubbing it into you young people, it's a shame. I never knew anyone in my class or any class that couldn't read and write.
No,
and they're leaving school at 14 to 15 today, and some of them can't read and write. There's something wrong.
There is something wrong.
We've got school, but that was one thing. We talk about it, right. Our generation. We never, none of us knew anyone, unless they were dyslexic. And we didn't even laugh, but we knew that there was something wrong. But we didn't know about dyslexia. But the average child might be thick, but it would be able to read and write. An adult. I don't know.
What was your schools like then?
But then every teacher that we had a degree. They were all university. Everyone, even in junior school.
I was in one school, and from the primary right up to 14 years, in the Highlands, a big class, one teacher. And when I got to age of 12, 13, 14, I used to help with the young ones with the reading their books and so forth. And they all came on with that. And I loved doing that. It was great. So I didn't know there was a war on when I was up in the Highlands. I was here from the actual year the war started. And my grandmother had the business up here, and that was the back of that.
We ended up after the two nights
in
Arica. We stayed in this hotel. Well, it was an annex of it. Never was so cold in my life. Terrible. Frozen place. Misery. You'd no clothes. No. You'd take the suitcase and you took the things that you had to take, and maybe one. But anyway, they came round. I mind they brought a lot of clothes for people to try. I don't know where they got the clothes, but they must have been in the First World War. Because I never seen such old fashioned coats. Oh, down to your ankles, and of course you didn't wear them then. You were up just below your knees. But you couldn't get clothes, of course, during the war. And that was it. You never get stockings. That was another thing too. You had to paint your legs. Yes, you paint. You tanned your legs.
Yes.
You had a bottle. You had a bottle and you rubbed it on your legs. And that was it. No stockings.
You went to the dancing instead of putting stockings on, you put the
no new clothes. Went to dance and we were always looking for things to wear, to change. Some people,
lots of things that could much get better today. No doubt about it. They live in luxury compared to what we did. Why not?
I forget.
I'm all for it. We had happy days without televisions or anything else. We made our own fun.
Oh,
we made our own fun.
You didn't have any. It's really, I remember we got a radio and it didn't work by electricity. It was a kind of a battery thing. And I remember taking it to this man. I mean, nobody else would ever let a child take this stuff. If it spilled acid. But you took this to a man across the road and he charged it. And that was your radio. It cost time. It would be a bit far thing what you say now. But that was when you were really young. I remember when we got to the electric light and the electric radio. I thought we were done. Away from the old battery. Nothing else.
What kind of things did you listen to on the radio?
In the radio, I used to listen to it, believe it or not, it was a
we used to get great plays.
Itma.
Do you I used to love the plays. You used to get great plays on a Saturday night.
And I was never good at watching plays.
No.
There was one in America. This is a gospel. I couldn't believe it, but it is true. There was a play on. This must have been before the war, but it was I don't know, like the men from Mars or something like that invading America, and it was so real. People ran screaming from their houses. It could only happen in America.
I remember that.
Do you remember that?
Yeah. We thought that was funny, but believe it was so funny. They didn't give it to us. We never got the play. They weren't going to risk it. But the Americans were running out of their houses. Sure, it was real. You know, they didn't realise. They say it was the most wonderful put-over play, but the wrong folk, they should have given it to the Scots, you know, we'd have said, oh.
I was bad advertisement, not to them.
I mind my aunt came back from America in the first boat. She bought trunks across. Oh, it was the most wonderful thing. We all had all these clothes. Oh, we were dressed for such a long time. She brought about, was it five or six trunks? How she got them all over? It was a big ship that came. That was the first ship she came over with. And she went to see, you know, where she had lived a long time and things. She's not the same place.
Did
of
she
course,
work
everything
there?
Changes.
Huh? Did she work there?
She worked, yes, before the first, during the first World War, she worked in Singapore too. I think the whole of the family worked in Singapore at that time. I remember our son telling us, he was in the American Army, and he knew all about Clydebank because his mother and father came from it, and they spoke about Clydebank. And he said, he landed at Greenock on the boats, you know, during the war.
Uh-huh.
And they put them on trains. And believe it or not, the trains passed Singers. You know, we had a huge clock. You've seen the picture of Singers' clock. And he said to the other soldiers, was here, my, what a name, you know. And they said, how would you know that? He said, because I know that clock. I know that clock. But, you know, it was fine.
Because our mothers never went out to work.
No.
Because
no,
there wasn't
no.
enough work for men, never mind women.
No.
Unfortunately, my mum had to. She was divorced during the war. My mum was divorced during the war.
Yeah, that was quite an unusual
and
thing, wasn't it?
The thing was, we were separated. My two sisters went to both, evacuated both. And at that time, I was with my grandmother. And what happened then?
You hardly heard of a divorce in our days, did you?
It was really sad when my mother and father broke up.
It was sad.
And I stayed up with them until I was 25 to look after my grandmother as well, and I helped in their business as well. But I had sad days as well, but I didn't have anything to do with war. I didn't know anything about the war at that time.
My grandmother lost four sons in the First World War.
Oh my.
My grandmother, she had 10 of a family, six girls and had their four boys, and she lost four boys during the 1418 war. It was awful, wasn't it?
So my mum, she joined the WAFs. Mm-hmm. It was either going out to the munition factories, and my mum had a bad shift at that time. So if I'd been away, she had to go to one of the others, so she was away 5 years. So I hadn't anything for 5 years more or less. So I had quite a sad time as well. I had a happy time too, a lot of nice friends. So I don't want to go back to it. I would never like to go back to that again.
After the war, did you see your parents often, even separately?
Yes. When I came back, my two sisters, we were all a bit strange with one another. But that was 15 years I'd been out my mother's home. And we got together, that wee bit strange. It took a wee while to get to know one another.
What a shame.
But that was the war too, that broke up families as well.
Yes, no, you didn't really hear much at all about divorces, did you?
No.
You certainly didn't have partners in those days.
No. God, especially my grandma.
Oh, we were very, lots of things we were very narrow. But
very narrow-minded, my grandmother was. My mother was very modern.
Of course, it was just the way the things were. And another thing, children today are healthier than what our crowd were. Because, I mean, the money, what, they didn't get any
What age am I?
I know, but I'm talking about
healthy.
An average.
I know. There was quite a lot.
Yeah, we've been lucky. We must have been well fed.
Yes,
no,
I definitely was well fed from the farms.
I know we were always well fed.
My mother, we had soup every day till I began to look like a plate of soup.
That was the exciting food,
but the family next door to us, they had that, they had tinned evaporated milk for their tea. And I thought they were awful well off. I was dying for a piece of that evaporated. And I used to say, not fair, Mum, they can get that. I didn't realise that we were getting real, but my mother wouldn't have the evaporated.
I mind Addie's girl, and she used to have, she used to get a piece of condensed milk.
That's right, that's
condensed
what
milk. You made the tablet with that.
Yeah, condensed.
I thought that was wonderful.
Condensed milk. They bought it because it was cheaper. Tea, coffee.
Coffee, please.
Tea. What about the girls?
Tea or coffee?
I don't want to drink tea.
Lovely scenery to it, and I must say I like your cathedral. Do you like up here?
Yes, very much so. Yeah.
I married an Englishman too.
Did you?
Just to show there was no ill feeling.
When I'm
away anywhere, they say English, you know, and I'll say no, Scottish, but British. I say British. I think it's more important to say British than anything.
So
my mother was English. She was born down in right across from Cali. Where do you get the ferry to go over to?
Dover.
I couldn't think of Dover. My mother was born in Dover Castle. No, she was born. It says on her birth certificate, Dover Castle, but what it was, her father was in the army. He was a regimental sergeant major, and she was born there. And my sister, when she was young, she used to tell everybody, I used to give her some cake. My mother was born in a castle.